Welcome back to the West Side Discussion Podcast, the first and only podcast dedicated to West Side discs. My name is Jay. Thanks for listening. This is episode 24. Today I'm joined by Christopher Baker. Chris has been on Team West Side for a few years. He's also sponsored by Skybreed Discs. You may know him as Dr. Disc Golf. Chris, how are you doing today?
Hey, Jay. Thanks so much for having me. Just really honored and excited to be on this podcast. First, just wanted to thank you, too, for everything you've done for the team with promoting our team and all of our social media channels. So really excited to be here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for coming on. Now, before we kind of get into it, just to kind of set this episode in time. So the Royal Box just came out and people are starting to get those. What do you think of those new discs?
Yeah, really excited to get those discs last week. Got a chance to try out some of the new ones, the Brave and the Strive. The Brave, as we've learned, is the new fairway driver, kind of an understable partner to the Explorer. I currently bag a Dynamic Discs Lucid X Maverick in that spot, so I was out testing it against that.
Okay, how'd that compare?
Pretty close, yeah. That older run of Lucid X Maverick is one that I've had trouble replacing, so I'm excited to have a mold that something that I could use in the future. For me, I release with a pretty flat release, so I'm looking for something that will kind of hold a turn the entire time and not fight out of it too hard, but also not turn over and roll. And the Brave did that for me in testing.
Yeah, I have the Explorer. I bagged that, and I used to have the River. I get some good distance with that. And so when they compared it to those two discs, I was very excited to get it. And I think that will be, I mean, it's definitely making my bag in addition to the Explorer. What do you think the numbers are going to be on that?
Just for my throws, if I had to guess, probably, it had a lot of glide. I'd say probably 7.5, maybe minus 1.5 on the turn and maybe 1 on the fade.
Okay. All right. And then what about the Strive?
Strive was pretty fast. I was out throwing it with a little wind in a headwind. It was turning and not really coming out of it. Like I said, I let go pretty flat. I have a hard time with hyzer flips. So in a headwind, didn't quite work for me. In a tailwind, I got some really good flights out of it. It would hold a turn for about 2/3 of the flight and then kind of fade out at the end. Might be a little bit faster than I like to throw, but I don't currently bag something like that. I have my high speed driver is a Ballista Pro, and so okay. I'm looking for something that will hold. I've got a couple beat up Ballista Pros, but I'm looking for something that will hold a turn a little bit longer. Checked out the Destiny, the Trespass. I've got a couple lighter weight Trespasses, so it's possible. I'm gonna have to do a little bit more testing. We'll see how it goes with the Strive.
And what about the Hope? Were you using that at all before this box came out?
No. It's a little bit deeper rim putter, and I prefer lower profile putters. So I currently putt with the Retro Pure or sometimes the Medium Pure in the cold. I also really like throwing the Maiden. So the deeper putters are hard for me to get good releases on. It felt great in that new Grand Plastic. It was super grippy. I think it's the kind of disc that putter throwers are going to really love. People that like to throw discs like the Warden and the Judge, I think they'll really like throwing the Hope.
All right. And then were you throwing the Honor before?
Yes. Yeah. Honor is kind of in and out of my bag. Kind of depends on the course. Okay. It's for me, like a little bit longer version, I throw the Pioneer or I have some more overstable Ballista Pros. It kind of fits between those distance wise. One interesting thing about me is that I'm really picky on colors in my bag. So I like to try not to have different colors for each of my drivers and then each of my throwing mids and putters. So the fact that I was able to get an Orbit one, an Orbit Honor with a black rim and a white interior actually makes it easy to toss in my bag because I don't bag any other black discs. Okay. So I was excited to get an Orbit Honor that I can actually probably keep in the bag.
Nice. All right. Now, maybe a week or so ago, you actually came out with, you had an in the bag, but it was a glow in the bag. So are you going to have to redo that with the Savior? Is that making your glow bag?
That is absolutely making my glow bag. Probably my regular bag and the glow bag. really just having a savior in baseline plastic, something I've been looking forward to for a long time. When it first came out, I was kind of surprised that they did it in the premium plastic to start, because I think it's the kind of disc that you want in that baseline plastic, for touch forehands on your upshots, and then just to have some that you can beat in a little straighter. So yeah, I'm super excited about the Savory. We went out and tested that one, me and a buddy here in town, and really liked the flight. I like the Savior for me. It's a little bit less deep than a harp. And so having that in both a baseline and a premium plastic now in my bag is really going to help.
So you're gonna bag both of those then?
Yeah, we're going to see how it goes. I have a favorite first run Grand Savior that I've been bagging for a while that's really a workhorse for me. And I'm going to throw this Glow Sense Savior in the bag and see how it beats in if it gets a little straighter. One of the slots in my bag I've been missing is kind of a straight thrower, a little bit slightly overstable straight thrower between my thrower maiden, and I also bag a slammer. And so having something that I can throw that won't go too far, but will have a little more stability than the maiden is something I've been looking forward to. So hoping that this baseline savior will kind of beat into that.
Do you typically have like the same mold in different plastics, or do you have, or are you more different molds?
I do. I try to have as few decisions as possible to make when it comes to picking molds. I won't not carry a disc because I'm trying to do as few molds as possible. But just feel, trying to keep feel the same on the grips. Like I said, I don't like huge deep rims, and so having some thinner rimmed discs that I can throw for different slots is helpful.
So you typically have like fewer molds but different plastics.
Yeah, usually, or just
Okay.
different, same mold, but same plastic, but more beat in. So
Oh,
I
good. Okay.
carry three bears, two in Lucid and one in the, I'm sorry, in VIP and one in the VIP Ice. And then like I carry four or five Ballista Pros. I like the gold line burst, and I have an Opto that's a little more beat in. So yeah, different kinds of plastic sometimes, if it makes sense.
So I tell you what, before we get too ahead of ourselves, then let's just kind of back up and go to the beginning. How did you get into disc golf?
Yeah, so I started playing disc golf in 1997. That was my between my junior and senior years of high school. I was a military kid and grew up kind of all over the place. Ended up just outside of Atlanta in Marietta, Georgia for high school and college, and played a lot of Ultimate Frisbee in high school, and then had a buddy that took me out to disc golf course down there, 1997, and just played every day that summer. And I think it's kind of the same story for a lot of people. Continued to play a lot in college. We didn't have a lot of courses down around Atlanta that time. Every course was probably at least a 30-minute drive. But continued to play. And then moved to Indiana in early 2000s for work and eventually grad school here. And played quite a bit when I first moved here. There's a long-standing Indiana Fall Series that I did a couple years, played all the events. Interestingly, didn't even get a PDGA number until 2014, until I played my first sanctioned event in 2014. I wish I had gotten it back when I first started. I would have had a pretty low number. So I started playing some sanctioned tournaments in 2014. Found my local club here in Bloomington, Indiana. It's home of Indiana University, and started playing some of sanctioned charity C tiers here. We have a wintertime series that's a collection of charity C tiers, and started playing in some of those sanctioned tournaments, getting more active with my club, and then started running events and running league with my club. And yeah, that's pretty much how I got into disc golf.
How did the charity events, how do you decide what the charity is? How do you go about doing that?
So this winter series that we've been involved with since I believe 2014, it is designed for food banks. It's usually January through March, so after the holidays when food banks get depleted of resources. We run these events and play in these events for these charities. And a good friend of mine, Jason LaBella, he got this started, and then we started helping run events for his series. And it's really great because with these competition and endowment program PDGA C tiers, they waive the $10 PDGA fee for non-members, and a good chunk of the PDGA fees get donated to the charity. So you're looking at, depending on how many people show up, between $800 to $1,500 an event to donate to these charities. So it's really nice to have that. People love it. They're usually inexpensive. AMs get a series disc and get two rated rounds usually. It's their trophy only, except for the pros, which will get a small payout after the donations are taken out. So that was really exciting to see that, and kind of inspired me to do a similar thing in the fall. We started a charity fall series, a Southern Indiana fall series, 2017, 2018, and started picking charities. We let the tournament directors decide what charity they wanted to do for those, so they all have their own special interests. We've done one for our local animal shelter here that my daughter has helped me run, and then we've done one for our Wheeler Mission, which is a mission for homeless people here in Bloomington. So that's pretty exciting. I love running these events because it feels rewarding. You're not just doing payouts for AMs, you're actually impacting your community with disc golf, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. Now, you and your daughter, you've run the animal shelter one a few years now, right?
Yeah, we did our second year this year. So last spring, we ran it as a junior only event. We got 25 juniors for that event. And then we actually expanded it to a to everyone event this year, to try to get some more players and more donations. So I think we donated like $600 last year, and then I think we had $1,500 donation this year to the animal shelter here.
It seems to me that you're busier in the winter and fall than the summer. Is that true, or is that just kind of my
Yeah,
perception?
that's absolutely true. So yeah, I'm running a C tier for the winter series. And usually helping with a second one in the wintertime. And then I'm now helping run two of those for the fall series. And then I try to run some kind of dynamic discs tournament type in the summertime, whether that be like a trilogy challenge, or I've done the Veterans for Vets events as part of our fall series this year.
Where did Dr. Disc Golf come from?
Yeah, so that's something that we set up about 5 years ago. It's just kind of a running joke with our club. Our club is an interesting makeup. We have a lot of Indiana University professors and professionals here. We've got so by trade, I'm a pharmacist. I technically have a doctorate in pharmacy. I just work in an outpatient pharmacy where I dispense prescriptions, just like a CVS or Walgreens. But I have some friends that are professors, other pharmacists. We've got a physical therapist in our club that helps run things, and so just kind of a running joke that we're all doctors. But we started a health challenge back about 5 years ago, just as a way to network with some other disc golfers. So we brought in Eric and Tina Oakley, a Bobby who was media with Dynamic Discs at the time, Jason Wilder who's on Team Dynamic Discs, Jordan Castro who's an MVP sponsor player now who was on Dynamic Discs, brought all these people together and set up a points-based health challenge for the off season, which is a really cool way to connect with all of these professional disc golfers and people in disc golf, and made some really good networking through that. Got healthy, and if you know Jordan, he lost a ton of weight doing this, so it was pretty cool to see his journey.
Was this before or after you were on Team Westside?
This was a little bit before, so a few others that I was able to develop good relationships was some of the RV drivers. So Tyler Searle, he drives the Latitude RV. Jonathan Ray, Jay Ray, he was involved in our health challenge too. So yeah, it was actually a really good way to network with all those people and have a few people who knew me well after that that could help with the application process for Westside.
So how did that how did that all happen then? Like, what was your story about getting with Westside?
Yeah, I had applied a couple years. Didn't really specify Dynamic or Latitude or Westside, just was excited to promote. So Tyler Searle came through our town with his RV in 2016, and I hadn't thrown any Trilogy molds at that point. I was actually looking for an overstable mid-range at the time, and a buddy of mine handed me a truth-tooled verdict, which, if anybody knows the history behind that, that was initially supposed to be the truth, and then Eric McCabe wanted it tooled a little differently, so they came out with a run of verdicts. I think it was 2013 that were for Am Worlds, but they say truth on the bottom, but they're actually the verdict mold. They gave me that. I started throwing that and started loving it. So when Tyler came through with his RV, I picked up a few more molds and got excited to throw that stuff. And I did also join the fan group, the Team Trilogy fan group, and started throwing entirely Trilogy stuff at that point. So 2018, I had applied. I reached out to Tyler and a few of my other connections and talked to them about the application, and then eventually got a call from the team manager at the time, Brian Shintaku. And we talked a little bit, and he said, what are you passionate about? I said, honestly, I'm just passionate about all the molds, and I'm happy to promote wherever you guys think is best fit. I'm bagging a lot of West Side stuff right now. And he said, great, we've got room there for you on Team West Side. Let's go get it.
And so is the Dr. Disc Golf off-season health challenge. Is that still something going on, or?
It is. We did it probably 2 or 3 years with disc golfers, and then haven't done it the last couple of years, and I regret it because I'm trying to get myself back in better shape now. I just started it up again this year. We've got a neighboring club that had some guys that were interested in doing it, and so we set up a little club versus club challenge this year. The Brown County disc golfers next to us are playing against the Bloomington disc golfers, so we're trying to all establish some healthy exercise and diet habits and trash talk each other and have a good time. So, yep, getting our veggie
Nice, very
servings in
cool.
and our fruit servings and all of our water every day. It's going well.
All right, very cool. Now, earlier we were talking about the Royal Box, talking about you had the glow bag, and you'd mentioned how you do a lot more winter events. Do you play a lot of glow rounds then, since it's probably darker more often, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, especially this time of year. Some nights I'm not getting off work until 6 o'clock. So I've been trying to get out and play some glow lately. We started a winter league here in Bloomington. I helped found it about 7 or 8 years ago. It's called Bloomington Winter Squads. And so what it is it's kind of a team-based league where the first 2 months in November and December we do glow. And then in January and February, we go indoors and do a more traditional indoor putting league where we have different kinds of games. And so we have captains and we draft a team. And then your teammates get points based on how many people they beat that night. So if there's 30 guys at league and you get first, you get 30 points for your team and on down. And so the exciting thing about that is every year the winning teams get a championship hoodie, and it's like the quest for the hoodie. It's pretty exciting. So we've done that for 8 years now. This is the first year my work schedule has kind of prevented me from being on a team, but I have been going out to our neighboring club and joining them. They have a Tuesday night glow league, so we've been playing some glow out there. So I'm excited. I think I'm actually gonna look into running a glow event in the spring when it warms up a little bit. Just jumped on to look at some of the fundraiser discs to see if we can get a couple glow molds that we can run like a two
Right.
disc tournament some night, probably sometime around March or April.
So kind of just from talking to you and just kind of following you for a couple of years, you've started a lot of things, like as far as leagues and courses and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, what's inspired you to start those and like what are some challenges keeping those things going?
Yeah, I at heart I'm a builder. I love coming up with new ideas and then seeing them implemented. The Winter League, the Fall Series that I founded for charity here, all those things excite me to be doing something new. I will say I'm not as good of a maintainer as I am a builder. So once I get these going, a lot of times, I'll try to find somebody else to help continue to run things, and I'll move on to another project. With the courses, I have a passion for course design. We installed my first course design in 2016. That's Deer Run Park in Nashville, Indiana. That's at the county over the other club utilizes over there. Just a public park. The city had some funds it's for economic development, meaning that they had some extra money that they could put into some recreation to drive tourists to come into town and spend money on restaurants and things. So having another activity in town. We developed Deer Run pretty cheaply. Got the baskets. We did some handmade signs. Did some turf tee pads and built all those frames and everything. So over the last 7 or 8 years, continuing to make little improvements to that course have been fun. Taking feedback from tournaments, from players, looking at PDGA stats for different rounds. That's been exciting to see that. And
Right.
yeah, and that course has been involved the last few years in the Indiana State Championships. So we have that is a public course, and then we have a 24-hole private course called Brown County Country Club that's right by there. And those two courses have been hosting that Indiana State Championships for the last 4 or 5 years now.
Did you help design the Brown County course?
No, interestingly, that course and our course were just starting at the exact same time. Nobody had talked to anybody. It's a friend of mine, Steve Shively, and his family who owned the land, and he was a disc golfing fan, and they just moved back into the area and wanted to put in. It's an old ball golf course and really pretty property, and decided they wanted to put a private course in there. And
Okay.
if you get a chance, come out and play both courses here in Southern Indiana. Brown County Country Club, the private course, is in the top 100 on UDisc. I'm not sure the exact ranking, but it's definitely in the top 100 for UDisc.
All right. Yeah, definitely check that out. So, I mentioned before, I grew up in Indianapolis. I'm in California now, but yeah, every fall my mom would always take us down to Brown County and Deer Run, to see the leaves, and she just loved going down there. So, yeah. Especially during the fall, people should go check out Brown County and play some of those courses.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area, especially in the fall. It's just tons of people come down to look at the leaves. It's not what you think of Indiana. Indiana is usually pretty flat. Southern
Right.
Indiana is definitely more hilly. There's some elevation changes, and both of those courses are really fun. They pair really well together, but I'm biased.
All right. I want to go back and talk about like the glow leagues you had mentioned, because that's something I've always kind of had an idea I wanted to do, like set up like a glow tournament or something. Would it be some kind of like advice to get one going that's successful? One of the things I'm thinking that might be stopping me is like my parks department might be worried about someone getting hurt, walking around in the dark. Like, what are some things to consider when starting a glow league or a glow tournament?
Yeah, for sure. I think definitely getting the buy-in of the Parks Department first. So, we've reached out to the park where we usually play our glow league and letting them know that we'll be out there after hours. Sometimes they'll have restrictions on parking. They'll close the gate at dark, and if you're parked inside, they'll start honking at you, telling you to get out of there. So, talking to the leadership for the Parks Department, letting them know that you'll be in there after hours and getting their permission to do that. Letting them know that you would be potentially putting some lights on the baskets. Usually, that time of day, there's not going to be anybody out walking around, so understanding that should be a pretty safe environment for not having any other park goers at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the course here where I would do it's a great like little small course. During the day, it's horrible to play because there's so many like walkers that are there. But when we play glow, you can blow right through the course because there's no one there.
I'd say also with the Winter League, incorporating some kind of a putting event with it. So one of the fun things that we do is we start off every night with a game called Knockout. So if you've ever seen people do this with basketball, sometimes people call it Knockout or Lightning, where you set up, we'll set up about 30 feet right at the edge of the circle and set up a line, and then someone will putt, and then if you miss it, we'll have a couple layup zones about 10 feet away where you miss it, you got to run, grab your putter, get it in the basket before the guy behind you makes his 30 footer. And then if you do that, you get to stay in, or if they hit it before you get your layup, then you're knocked out. And we just go until everybody's knocked out, and then we'll award points for the top five players for that game at the beginning of the night. And that kind of gets the blood flowing too at the beginning of a cold night outside. So that's always nice.
All right, yeah, that's a great idea. All right, so we kind of talked about a lot of the like the events and things you've run, and you're on Team West Side, and if that wasn't enough, you're also on the team for Skybreed Discs, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I've been with them for, I believe, 4 years now. I helped them start their team. So they wanted a little bit more organized and formal team structure. So just my experiences with Westside, seeing what a team contract looks like, seeing what how allotments are set up and bonuses are set up, and just kind of the general language, was able to help them write a team contract and set up some team communication. So I did that for the last 3 years, and then this year actually passed it off to another team member. Had some work changes where I wasn't able to contribute as much to that as I wanted to, so I was able to include another team member. I'm still representing them as my retail sponsor through the end of the year for sure.
So how'd you get connected with them?
Yeah, so Skybreed Discs is a local retailer here in Indiana. They are from Bowling Green, Indiana, which is a small town between here and Terre Haute, about 45 minutes west of Bloomington. And they do have a course on their property and a small pro shop. Most of their sales are online now. And like everyone else, they got a gigantic spike in sales right around the pandemic starting in 2020. And they were interested in doing some more promotion with the team, and like I said, some more organization. So yeah, everybody around here in our club in Bloomington loves to shop at Skybreed and their online site, and they've supported some of our events, and they do some discounts and things for different tournaments and player pack items for some of our tournaments. So it's been really great working with them.
How did you, I know you said you kind of got busy, so you had to pass off some of the responsibilities, but how did you balance being on like two different teams? Is that a challenge, or is it pretty much the same work?
Yeah, it's certainly a challenge because you want to be able to promote as much for both teams as you can. And if I would get something from my allotment with Skybreed in the mail, obviously for me it's going to be a trilogy type product. I'll post that on social media, tag them, share them, promote those kinds of things when I'm playing at tournaments. But pretty much a lot of that same stuff goes hand in hand. And if there's a new release and I'm getting it from them, I'll definitely shout them out and promote for them. We have a couple other team members here in our area, obviously, since they're close to us. So doing some review videos with Skybreed teammates. I've been very fortunate also to have a couple Westside teammates in our area. We have Elliot, who is a junior member, and Stephen Waits, who's about 2 hours south of me in Evansville. Who are around. So just creating as much content as possible and then
Right.
trying to distribute it through their appropriate social media channels.
Now you mentioned teammate Steven, who's also with Skybreed on Team Westside as well. You and him ran Am Worlds, right?
Yeah, it was mostly him and one of our other friends, Jason, who ran Am Worlds, but I was very honored. They asked me to be a course tournament director for one of the courses down there, the Hobstack course that was the women's course for 2 of the 5 days of the tournament. So that was really exciting to see that. I know the first day that we were there, we had a feature card with a different lady from 4 different countries, and we had a Japan,
Oh,
a
wow.
Canada, an England, and then we had a local who was representing the US. So that was really cool, just getting to announce those players. And we had PDGA media there. The whole week was really exciting to have all the PDGA people in town, and they had a huge opening ceremony with flags and all that. So that was really, really exciting. And then just going and seeing people that I hadn't seen in a while, going to they had a fly mart. Brody Smith came by for a day for our fly mart. And yeah, a really, really unique experience in an area that's not as big for disc golf, but they've got some really amazing courses down south of us here towards the Evansville area.
Ah, cool. Now, what's a course tournament director do? Is that different than a tournament director?
Yeah, so in a big event like that, which is a PDGA major, they will divvy up course director responsibilities. So actually, it was myself and another course director for that particular course, and we would be the starters for the course. We would be there early to get everything set up for the course, signage, advertising. We had to get all of our volunteers in the right place for spotters and people taking water and all those sorts of things. The PDGA was involved as well. They came out to help us with OB lines and all that, but just pretty much set up and tear down after the event, and just being there to answer any questions. If you're a tournament director for a single day tournament, you ha sometimes have to a answer rules questions. So those kinds of things, they would come back and ask questions like that. So it was good. I had a more experienced partner that day with me, and he was able to help with some of the rules questions too, and just kind of the general flow of things. So it was really nice to get to learn on the job that week.
Now, you mentioned when you were talking about Skybreed and you were the team captain, you had to step down just because you got busy at work. How do you normally balance like your responsibilities with work, family, disc golf?
Yeah, it's definitely very challenging to balance all of that. I usually, in the past, I would work every other weekend. So I would try to keep one weekend as a family weekend, and then one weekend I'd try to either run a tournament or play in a tournament. And my schedule rotates where I work early one week and late another week. So in my early week, I can usually make it out to league and play in those things. The hardest thing for me is just practice time. I want to improve like everybody else. So finding the time to get out and try new discs and practice is tough, but fortunately I've got some courses close by, and I've tried to involve my family too as much as possible. Like I said, my daughter was helping me when we ran this tournament for the animal shelter, and I've started getting her involved in playing some tournaments too. And my wife likes to come out and walk and caddy and do those things as well. My son is a sophomore in college, and he's played quite a bit with me over the years. So just making it an entire family event has been really fun. My dad too, he's not a disc golfer, but our course over in Brown County, it's his baby, and he's out there mowing every week, and he loves taking care of that place. So disc golf has become quite a family affair here.
Okay. Now, speaking of that, what did I read or see somewhere? Did you propose to your wife on a disc golf course? Was there something about
Almost,
that?
not quite. So when I actually met my wife through disc golf, when I first moved to Indiana, first warm day in the spring that I found, I went out to a course. I was living up in Indianapolis at the time. That was Somme Park, north side of Indianapolis,
Okay.
and met a couple nice people out there, and they invited me to play along with them and then hang out with them, after the round. And they were high school friends of my wife, and so they introduced us through their church group, and we started hanging out quite a bit since I was new to the area. And she came with me, and we played a few rounds here and there, and eventually we got to the point where I told her, I said, "Hey, if I ever get a hole in one while we're together at the disc golf course, then then I'll propose to you. I'll get you a diamond engagement ring, and I will propose to you there on this golf course." And so this never happened. We had been dating for a while, and one day went out here in Bloomington. We came to visit some of her friends, and her friends and I went out, and she actually stayed home sick, and I ended up getting two holes in ones in one day, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, and she was home. So we thought it was a curse. And this went on for 20 years. We ended up, I proposed and we got married and we had kids, and this went on, just became a running family joke. And so finally this year, just this past summer, we went out to one of the little elementary school courses that I designed here in town, and I took like two or three discs. I think I had like a maiden and a shield and my putter up here, and went out, and finally I put a shield in the basket when she was with me, and she got really excited and said, "I get a diamond, I get a diamond." And yeah, it was pretty amazing that it took 20 years.
Right, well, got to ask, and did you get her a diamond ring?
I did. I actually
All right.
Yeah, I ended up getting her a necklace with a pendant. It actually she got three diamonds, so I told her she got one for everyone that was with me that day. My
Oh,
son and
yeah.
my daughter were there as well, so they
Very
all
cool.
got to experience it. My daughter is a negotiator, so my daughter was like, "Well, what do I get when if you get a hole in one when I'm with you?" And we negotiated back and forth, and somehow we came out to like 40 some something dollars. And so my wife's like, "I get a diamond," and my daughter's like, "I get $40," and my son is like, "I didn't negotiate anything."
Well, he learned a lesson
Yeah,
then. Very cool. That's a cool story to end on. But before we go, what kind of upcoming, do you have any upcoming projects or events or anything?
I do. So I am still working on some video content. So if you get a chance to check out my YouTube channel, Dr. Disc Golf, go on there and check it out. We've done some fun videos over the years. I did a bag swap video with a buddy of mine. We've done a fun little video where we threw a bunch of old molds that we hadn't bagged for a long time, just to kind of see how things would go. So a friend of mine and I did that. I've done a bunch of road trip round videos. So, if we go on a family vacation, I've been to Maple Hill and De La Viega and Smuggler's Notch and Jackson down in Georgia. So, probably gonna do a couple more of those. I got a few more of those courses on my bucket list. We did a starter pack challenge video that I'm still editing. So, was down southern Indiana, Evansville, with a couple of friends for the pumpkin shootout a month or two ago, and we filmed a starter pack challenge. So, if any of you have seen the Central Coast one with Paul Macbeth and Eagle and Nate Sexton and Eric Oakley, it's a fun time. So we kind of tried to recreate that, and we had a Dynamic Discs starter set, a Dynamic Discs junior set. We had a West Side starter set, and then we had a Latitude 64 junior set. And so, kind of had fun with that, unwrapped those presents with each other, and then went out and threw around. So, hopefully, get that edited pretty soon. One that I've been working on for a long time is an all mold West Side video. So, I went out to the 24 hole private course and filmed myself throwing every West Side mold. Couldn't throw it again until I used up every mold.
Oh,
So
okay.
tried to see how far I could get using a different mold each time, not counting my putters. Once I got inside circle two, I would go ahead and use my regular putter, which at the time was a medium shield. But I did not make it. Spoiler, I did not make it through the entire 24 holes before I ran out of molds, and you'll see it on the video. But yeah, I have it almost finished editing that. It'll be fun, and I'll get that out on the channel pretty soon.
You said you were putting with a shield. What are you putting with now?
I putt with the Retro Pure now and the medium pure when it gets a little colder.
Because I started putting with the shield. I kind of take my cues from Team Westside's Joe Padilla. I was with the Hope. He was doing the Hope, and so I was trying that, and he kind of went over the shield with Josh Batan as well. And then you said you aced with the Shield, so I was thinking maybe the Shield's where it's at. But you're with the Pure.
Yeah, right I've now. Been kind of all over the place over the years. I'm pretty inconsistent as a putter. I'm very streaky, and I putted with the medium Shield for a while, and then kind of switched to something less stable. I was doing medium Maiden for a while,
okay,
and then went back to the Shield, and then just this last year, I just realized like sometimes if I get tired with those more overstable putters, I tend to miss short. They don't have as much glide. And that can be a good thing sometimes. It helps kind of keep you accurate and you don't soar it over the top of the basket. But
right.
with the Pures, I'm trying to develop a repeatable stroke where I don't have to put a ton of pop on it to get it there. So we'll see. I stuck with the Pure for the entire year this year. We'll see how it goes for 2024.
Yeah, I used to put with the Moonshine Pure. I mean, hey,
talk about the Kristen one,
yeah,
Kristen Tatar one, yeah, that's my glow bag putter right now.
Yeah, I mean, if the Pure is good enough for 2-time world champion, right?
For sure. Yeah, they feel great. Like I said, I like thinner putters, and those Kristen glow ones, they have a little bit of a puddle top to the top of them, which I really like. My fan grip on my putts, I use a lot of thumb, so okay. Having something to push off with the puddle on the top really helps that.
All right, very cool. Anything else you want to add, say, or plug before we go?
Nope, just really excited for 2024. Honored that I was able to be on the show with you here. Again, thanks for everything that you do for us. If you get a chance, I'm trying to get close to 1,000 follows on Instagram, so go check out Dr. Disc Golf, DrDiscGolf, and I'll keep pushing out as much content as I can to everybody.
Thank you so much for listening. This is the West Side Discussion Podcast. I want to thank Chris for coming on the show. The theme song is What Would You Be Like by Akira the Don. We'll continue the discussion